All right, well, I want to welcome everyone here for this edition of an interview with a wonderful healthcare provider in our group called the Stroke Movers. And usually we have groups, or we have interviews called My Stroke Story, but sometimes we get in professionals to talk about the stroke story that they experience through the lives of others that they're treating. And so I thought this was a great opportunity to invite a wonderful healthcare provider here. And we are going to get started today. So who do we have?
Hi, I'm Brenda Bryson, and I'm a physical therapist in Texas. Been doing this for 23 years, I think, something crazy. I don't know how that happens. Yeah. And so worked in inpatient rehab, acute care settings for quite a while, but then have transitioned to outpatient. And now for the last, I guess this will be my 9th year of owning a PT, outpatient PT practice. So, but yeah, it's kind of daunting when you first get out of the hospital.
I thought that we would talk about that because there are concerns for caregivers. We often talk about the actual stroke survivor, but today we're going to talk about the actual caregiver, bringing someone who has survived a stroke and is coming home, has left rehab, whether it's acute rehab or just the hospital, depending on how serious it's been, and all the concerns that just seem to overwhelm a person at times when they've got big life changes. So Brenda, thank you for addressing this today.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of hard to speak generically for everyone, but you know, if the more involved you have been kind of in watching the rehab and going to sessions and practicing, and you know, maybe you did a car transfer, or maybe you did some hands-on work, but it's kind of like, how, you know, if you're still working and so you're going to try and figure out how to work and how to, is the house accessible? Are we going to be able to get in the bathroom? You know, there's a lot of, if you're very mobile and you've never been around people with mobility issues, you're not seeing a lot of the little things. So if someone's coming home at a wheelchair level, it's amazing just how things on the counter or things on the kitchen table, if they're out of reach, just feels like another barrier to the person in the wheelchair. And so I think anytime you add on the caregiver role on top of a family relationship, that's hard too, because you know, it's sometimes it's hard to verbalize all the things the person needs, and sometimes it's really uncomfortable to be the caregiver and have to, like, I have to take you to the restroom, you know, I have to dress you. And so it's a great opportunity to use humor and try and just go, okay, we got to take this a day at a time, and sort of have some resources available, or some people to call, something so you don't feel like you're just stuck somewhere or stranded. Because kind of the last thing you want to feel is isolated, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, or just so overwhelmed, you almost feel paralyzed yourself, you know, like, I don't know what to do. And I think in the short period of time people are in the hospital, maybe the loved one also has expectations. They're still hoping that that person is going to walk out of the hospital and is going to be able to do so much more for themselves. There's the big question of how long is this going to take, which, of course, we don't always know, you know.
Right.
But I'm wondering, too, if those of us that work in hospital settings need to take a step back and think a little bit more through that transition for people too. You know, I don't know if we always prepare people as well as we could either.
Right, and back in the day, they would have transitional living apartments. So before you really left rehab, and you know, this got slashed usually years ago, like, what? But you had to spend the night in this apartment that was inside of the hospital. that basically no one was there to help you, but obviously there was a call button and someone would come help you. But it was a good dry run to see, like, how do you really do without the nurses there? How do you really do, you know, you were sleeping in a real bed. You weren't in a hospital bed. You had to get in and out of the chair, you know? And so it was helpful in a lot of ways, because I think it the fear of the unknown is great. So even though it wasn't your house, if you had done it, then it was less scary to be like, okay, I think I can go home and I think I can do this.
Yeah.
And so, because it's a lot of adjustment and just medications and equipment and I do feel like it's easy to be the cheerleader all the time in healthcare and really feel like, oh, you're gonna do this. But there's a lot of, it's hard on your personality. It's depressing. Sometimes it's very, you're trying to adjust to a new norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we really give people that grace to really feel that, because we're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got 30 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah. It's hard when you're in the hospital. There is a very real time limitation in these things. Absolutely. And sometimes people seem to get discharged and, especially from a hospital bed, not so much from rehab, but, you know, you didn't expect them to go home that quickly. You know, things happen on weekends and it's like, oh, they're gone.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I think too, it might be something for people to think about when they're bringing a loved one home, if it's just a couple, to invite a friend to come, that the person's comfortable being around. I mean, you both have to be comfortable with that person, but even if they don't do any of the hands-on personal care, they can talk through things like, how are we going to do this? What would be a good situation here? Or this is what they said at the hospital. So you've got someone to bounce things off of who is not also disabled and won't maybe see things as clearly as you will from your perspective. So maybe that's a good starting point too.
I've always suggested, like, if you think of it like, you know, when you're bringing a baby home, you know, and you kind of have invoked a team of church friends or family or something. So you've got some meals in the freezer, you know, you may have some people available. Caregiver respite is a real deal. And it's very much just like at coming home with a newborn and thinking you're just going to do it all yourself. Like, that's a recipe for failure, basically, because you're going to be exhausted and you can't really be on 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a schedule, setting something up, you know, like, okay, this person's going to come over for 5 hours and I'm going to go grocery shopping, or, you know, like, it's basic, but I think most people are more familiar with maybe having an infant or remembering some of that. But to me, that's a better way to sort of, okay, you're not just there by yourself, you know, you've kind of rallied the troops, and at least maybe you have a game plan for the first week or something.
Yeah, even meals, you know, can make a big difference, definitely. Mm-hmm. Or somebody coming and just doing your laundry for you. You know, and a lot of times people don't know how to help you. So I think maybe too, if you can, even before the person comes home, you think about the things that you just normally would do every day, the laundry, or like I said, the meals, the shopping. And those are the things that are good to say to people when they say, oh, if you need any help, let me know. Oh, well, actually, I have a little list here. Is there something you'd like to do? Could you pick something off this list? It would be a big help to me.
Huge. Yeah. I'm in a rural area. And so, like, the best version of, there's no home delivery outside a certain radius for groceries, but you can go online and do your, and just curbside, and they'll pick it up. So, you know, I think stuff like that is brilliant, because it keeps the flow going and you have help.
Mm-hmm. I think too, because I was recently asked about, how do you let friends know that we don't need so many visitors the first several days, that we're trying to find our own in this. Maybe you can give people a little task to do. They'll feel like they're showing their love to you, but they won't be just sitting there while you're trying to get things done.
Well, and I think too, like almost, I mean, this is the end of life example too, but like when someone's been on hospice, there's usually a hospice volunteer that's a really good mediator to just, okay, you know, day one, day two, what do we need to do? And so learning that it's okay to limit who's actually in the house is very helpful. And that, yeah, you know, you can help and you can bring stuff by, but we don't need 20 people in here. You know, that's just going to make someone more tired. Exactly. To feel like they have to entertain, mm-hmm, or sit up. Because they may be really exhausted just from being in the hospital. And when your brain is trying to heal, you're tired.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you say to someone who also is struggling with, I'm a wife or I'm a husband, I'm not a therapist, I don't really know what to do, but maybe home health hasn't started yet, I'm feeling anxious because it's going to be, you know, 5 days before somebody comes in for therapy, I should be helping them do something, and all they want to do is sleep, you know?
Yeah, well, no one gets really healing good sleep in the hospital. And there's a fine line between staying in bed all day and getting up, moving around, but still allowing your body to heal. And so I think honoring that, and that's going to show up really easily in mobility, you know? So if the person, when they're awake and alert and have good energy, can do 75% of the task, and then when they crash, they might not be able to help at all. So I think maybe learning a routine, but not feeling like there has to be this schedule, you know, or you're gonna lose ground. Like no one does better when they feel like they're under pressure, you know? That's not gonna help. Because usually the person who's had the stroke is already, they have enough pressure on themselves. They want to get better. But brain healing requires sleep. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's a tapering schedule of just day one, let's just figure out how to get in the house and let's set up some routine or some schedule, maybe get some volunteers to help and come by. But keep it pretty low key. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, each day, maybe try and sit up a little bit longer or, you know, do some movement around the house. Mm-hmm. But I think removing that pressure is good. I mean, therapists generally feel like people either need a fire lit under them to get motivated or they need to be reined back. There's very few people in that perfect middle ground. But I think just giving yourself some grace, you know, that being in the hospital wore me out. Let's just give ourselves a couple of days to just, mm-hmm, and then we'll have our feet on the ground and we can figure all this out.
Mm-hmm. Do you think too, that maybe in those first couple of days, if they're in a situation where there's no therapist coming in, just being trained on a proper positioning is pretty big?
You know, I think everything is functional. So if you're going to roll in bed every hour or something during the day, that's practice, that's exercise, that's moving, you know, that's bending your knees and pushing and you know, that's a great way just to, for the caregiver to help with draw sheet, you know, and maneuvering. But that's work. That's exercise. Sitting at the side of the bed for just a few minutes and just working on sitting balance, that's, mm-hmm, exercise. It doesn't have to be huge. I try and compare it to like Like if you've ever had the flu or you've ever felt really puny and you're in bed and you think, okay, I feel better. And you go take a shower and that's it. Like you have no more energy left.
Right, right.
To me, that's the easiest way to explain to someone else kind of what this process feels like. Mm-hmm. That there's only so much energy, and when it's gone, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that rest is big. And so just little doses is good. Sitting up to eat a meal and then lying back down. That's exercise right there.
The emotional stress of having had a stroke is also wearing and can cause fatigue. What can you say about just what they're going to go through emotionally after something like this?
I'm a big fan. I mean, I know some people, some people could say this about me. Like if I get really exhausted and like, I become almost labile. Like I'll start crying, you know, just because I'm super hungry and I'm super exhausted and I don't even have a neurological diagnosis.
Yeah.
So, you know, some degree of allowing, giving space for some of that to come up, because I think a lot of us try and hold that in. Like I'm German and I don't like crying in public. So the last thing I'd want to do is cry in the PT gym at the hospital and let anyone see that. Mm-hmm. But if I'm at home and I'm safe and I feel good, I think more of that emotion is going to come up. And I think that that goes along with it too. I mean, if you've ever brought a baby home, you've probably cried too. I'm like, what? And so giving yourself permission, whoever you are, if you're the helper, if you've had the stroke, to feel, because you have to acclimate yourself to this is where I am today. You have to mourn the loss of where you were before, and you have to say, this is my reality, even though I want to keep getting better. This is I have to adapt to this. Mm-hmm. And I think that brings up a lot of sadness, a lot of, it's just hard. And so anything, what would you do for a friend? You know, give them a hug, let them cry, let them feel that. Mm-hmm.
Fear will get stuck there. How am I that person out of that feeling, because this isn't going to be going away anytime soon. And I just think people have to realize that people will go through emotional stages too. And it doesn't mean that this kind of sadness will never come back again, but it doesn't have to be a place where people stop, even if they're going through it.
I'm not a fan of wallowing in it and that becoming the pattern. You know, to me, that's not healthy. That's just, oh, I'm sad and I love being sad and I'm just going to be sad all day. That's different. I do think weather, you know, if it's winter and it's gray outside and the sun is not out, that's hard enough to feel happy. Mm-hmm. On top of, oh my gosh, I have all these changes. So I think being clear on that, like, it's I'm giving you permission to feel this, and we're going to sit here, but we're also going to know that we can still have some fun, and we can, we're alive, and we're going to have a lot of good stories about this whole process. Who knew how much fun you could have, you know, dressing, or, you know, it's bizarre, but it can strengthen a bond. Mm-hmm. And just kind of humor is a good strategy just to help get through some stuff that's really tough. Mm-hmm. And I think just I remind people all the time, like, oh my gosh, you know, because usually people have more than one thing going on. Mm-hmm. So like, if you just had that brain tumor, or if you just had that stroke, or if you just had those blood clots, like that would be huge, but you have all of it. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's okay just have a sad day, you know, watch Steel Magnolias and just be sad.
Yeah, and then find ways to bolster yourself or have people around that can be more positive and speak hopefully to you.
And I think maybe knowing the things that bring you joy. So if it's seeing your grandkids, or if it's the sunshine, or if it's flowers, or if it's, you know, if you paint, you know, get back to some of those things that bring you joy, even if it's a lot harder or you can't do it for very long.
Yeah.
That is lovely exercise, mm-hmm. you know, because you're connecting with something you really love and that brings you joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. I think that's really good. Very good. As time goes on and they've started their outpatient therapy or home health or whatever, there'll be a time when I think a lot of people would be ready for some kind of a stroke support group. I think meeting other people that have been through a similar situation and are at different stages in that, I think that can be helpful too.
Yeah, and it's good for the caregiver as well, because a lot of times the caregivers can kind of build community and either they have their own discussion or, you know, or they're learning something from the process too, because I think that's, you know, I never want support groups to turn into complaining sessions or, yeah. You know, you don't necessarily want to take this on as your new identity. At the same time, when you're around people, you see a lot of creativity of like, oh my gosh, look how she gets out of bed, or look how they get in and out of the pickup, or, you know, it's a great resource to keep, or you find out, go to this restaurant. They have the best accessible bathroom and their tables are a good height, you know, and you just learn a lot of tricks to moving around within the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, broadens your world a little bit.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think addressing that mobility piece is pretty big for people, whether it's at home or in the community, and realize that some very simple modifications or just changing furniture around can actually make a big difference.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, because then it's actually safer if you have this bigger area to move, you know, every now and then it's like, okay, this doorway is too narrow, you know? Like,
yeah. What do you do? Yeah.
But a lot of times you can just take the door off, you know, and if the door, I mean, interior doors, but if you take the door off, all of a sudden you don't have this extra step and you've got more space depending on the layout of the house, you know, and so the door goes in the garage and, you know, you can put a shower curtain up or something if you need privacy, but there's a lot of little creative tips and tricks kind of like, and I think a lot of times you learn that more from other people who've done that, mm-hmm. who are just mm-hmm. have become creative.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now, Brenda, you actually have a Facebook group, I believe, for caregivers. So can you tell us more about what you have on your Facebook group?
Well, I last year, because I would try and go, like if I found out someone at church, you know, someone was on hospice or someone, you know, and I would kind of contact them and say, hey, do you want me to come over and kind of have a transfer training day? Are you doing good with getting out of the car? You know, because a lot of people that don't have a medical background, this is overwhelming. And so I kind of did two things at the same time. I created the Facebook group just because there's a lot of good information on Facebook that seems like it's good to share with caregivers. And then I created an online course. So it's just a, it's about 60 different videos of little snippets where basically you can, you know, you can watch what you need. So how do we get in and out of a car? How do we get up and down a step? How do we get in and out of the bathroom? You know, and you can just watch what you need. So I share those every week or so on the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
But then obviously if you really need that information, it's pretty reasonable and you can just purchase it and watch it on your phone or on a computer. So if you need that, you kind of got it wherever. So it was just me me and some other seasoned therapists who've kind of, you know, we go over equipment and I think there's still, I did a presentation at our senior center and one of the ladies was like, what's that belt the person has on? And I was like, great question. Let's learn about the gait belt. So we just watched a little video, you know, this is a gait belt. It's a nice handle, clothing slips. And so the Facebook group is just kind of a free resource that's nice to just kind of, if you're on Facebook, it's a nice thing to just kind of keep on and check out. Because mm-hmm. I put all kinds of crazy stuff on there. Like yesterday I loaded a video of like they made a lift for a 98-year-old man to get into his tractor.
Yeah.
Cool. Because he can't get up the big steps. And this thing just, you know, electronically raises him up. That there's a lot of mobility issues if you're going to try and travel, like at the airport. Holy cow. That is a whole other, that could probably be an entire page as well.
Yeah, really.
But it's an important issue. And a lot of airports, the fire department that services the airport usually has some pretty good lifts and some different things. And so it's a whole nother thing to ask questions about and what's going to happen to your wheelchair while you're traveling and, you know.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
It's like a whole nother level of stuff, but it's just a fun resource because I feel like it's kind of like changing a tire. Like it's not exciting content to watch when you don't have a flat tire. All of a sudden.
Yeah. When you do, it's like,
what do I do? Yeah. Crud. And so it's kind of nice just to be able to resource something quickly when you need it.
Definitely. So how would people find both of those, your course and your Facebook group?
The Facebook group is called Safe and Healthy Caregivers. And on the cover page of that, like when you get to it, it actually has a link to the course, which is safetyfirsttransfersolutions.com. And so it's just you just click and, you know, enter your email and pay for it. And then all you need to do is log in anytime from your phone or whatever, and you can access the information. So it just downloads right away and it's all there. So it's trying to be simple.
Yeah, in this world of technology, yeah. Well, I'm so glad you did that. What a wonderful resource, for sure.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I think it's helpful for caregivers. It's helpful for new grads. I don't think it's offensive if you have a sitter or a caregiver that isn't fabulous or maybe is new, you know. I feel like this is a good resource for that too. Like, hey, let's watch these videos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's many ways to educate.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, thank you for doing that. It's fabulous. Good. Well, we've got some good things on this podcast or interview that we're doing here. And I want to thank you so much for taking time out to meet with us today. That's really super.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it because I feel like it's such an important, lovely group of people who've just had this happen and they just need some more resources and some attention.